The last case on our calendar, 03-1066, Ann Murphy Harvey versus Yong C. Wong. Mr. Close.
If it pleases the court, counsel, and Chief Justice Moore, I would request to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there. Oh, I guess there's no clock there, is there? I'm sorry.
I guess. Your Honors, if it pleases the court, there's an issue that this case is about, and there are a number of issues that it is not about. The question that has been certified to you is essentially whether or not Rule 6C extends the time for filing a motion for a new trial under Civil Rule 59 and 50 in the event the entry of judgment has been mailed to the parties. Directing your attention to Rule 6E, it says succinctly, whenever the party has a right to do some act after the service of paper upon him and the paper is served by mail, 3 days shall be added to the prescribed period. It seems that the operative question here, number one, is a judgment entry a paper, which I submit that certainly it is, and number two, is it required to be served by, or is it required to be served in this case by mail? And it's certainly no question in the facts of this case that the entry was sent by the clerk by mail and ultimately received by the appellant Illinois National on January 3rd of last year.
Counsel, what's the effect if the journal entry had not been mailed by the clerk of court pursuant to Rule 58?
If it had been served by hand delivery, there would be no extension. If it were not served
not transmitted at all.
The way the rules read today, if it was never transmitted, obviously under the appellate rules, under Appellate Rule 4B2, the time for appeal would not begin to run. Question is ultimately whether or not someone would lose their right to file a motion for a new trial or a motion judgment NOV if no service was ever done. A strict reading of the rule would say that after 14 days, you've got no opportunity to ever do that. And I think that that is probably inappropriate. This court actually revised the Appellate Rule 4A, I believe in 89 or thereabouts, to require the clerk to do service because the issue kept coming up under a due process argument. What happens if you never get the notice? I think the answer to your question succinctly is that under the present rules, and particularly as applied in this case, rights would be lost to the parties to take the act that they are allowed to do under the rules, presuming the clerk has done his function properly. When the amendment was made to Rule 4, the appellate procedure, it did not likewise necessarily amend the requirements under Rule 50 or under Rule 59 relating to the 14 days to file there. Now, this court has looked at a similar, although certainly not identical, issue on a couple of occasions, and I refer you in particular to the Puffer and the Dugans cases, but those were in relation to Rule 53, which had to do with magistrates. And I submit that there is at least two very distinct differences between dealing with magistrates' reports and dealing with what we have here. In the first place, the magistrate rule is different because it doesn't give 3 additional days for the clerk to do the mailing. It simply says the clerk shall mail. In the second place, it's different because there is still an opportunity for judicial review. Magistrates don't put on final appealable orders. It takes a judge to do that. And therefore, there is a built-in protection there also that I think when you look at Dugan and Puffer allows you to make a distinction that doesn't exist here. As far as that goes, even in the cases involving arbitration within the common pleas courts under local rules, you've got the Martin case and some others that talk about that time being mandatory and no additional time for service. But likewise, you've allowed the additional built-in protection of the fact that a judge has got to ultimately approve what happens there. In addition to that, and counsel for Appellee makes much of the federal cases in his brief, there is a very significant difference in the federal law than what there is here. In the first place, under the federal law, we don't have a 30-day jurisdictional issue for appeals like we do in the Common Pleas Court here in the state of Ohio. Under the federal law, under Federal Rule 4C5-2, under the appropriate circumstances, after your appeal time is run, the judge can give you an additional 30 days to file the appeal anyway, which would help address situations exactly like what we have here. In addition, under Federal Rule 4C5B, in some circumstances, you can get up to an additional 180 days to file an appeal in the event there's excusable neglect, the kind of things we would generally see, I would guess, in a GTE electric type analysis of cases. Additionally, under the federal rule, there's a significant difference because the clerk there also does not have 3 days to file or to serve. The clerk must immediately serve pursuant to Federal Rule 77 once an entry of judgment is put on. I think those distinctions are significant when we look at what's happened in a case like this one here. In effect, Illinois National has been blown out with no chance of having any appeal heard of very significant issues in this case, when in fact they should have had the opportunity under the facts that are here.
Counsel, in effect, there's a lot more going on than that, isn't there?
Oh, Your Honor, there's a whole lot more going on than that.
Because if you win, based on Gladys, your client pays no money. Am I right?
That's correct, but it's not that the plaintiff gets no money. The plaintiff has already gotten a credit for $6 million.
I said your client. Your client is not the plaintiff. Your client would not have to pay anything.
That is correct. I would presume
if you win on this narrow issue of the 3 days. If you lose on it, presumably your client will want to attempt to or might want to attempt to assert a legal malpractice case.
I suppose that's possible, Your Honor, but you also must remember that at the time this action was taken.
Because they would then have to pay how much money?
Sure. In this case, it would be $8.5 million after the set-off.
So there's $8.5 million tipping one way or the other based on the outcome of whether or not there was 3 additional days.
That is probably correct, Your Honor. But I would also say that at the time this...
And how did the Court of Appeals answer that question?
The Court of Appeals certainly wouldn't be here on a certified conflict with the case out of the 7th District if the 12th District hadn't said that the 3 days did not apply.
Right.
Your Honor, I would also remind the Court, though, that at the time this action was taken, just in the direction you're going here, that the 7th District was the only published case in the state directly on point applying 50 and 59 to 6E, and it said it was okay. In addition, obviously the Rules Advisory Committee, Stan Darling has been on it for years, and I know that the appellee cited Weisenberg to the contrary, but it was Darling's position also that the 3 days applied, which significantly surprised us, obviously, when we got the decision out of the 12th District Court of Appeals.
Stan Darling.
Yeah. Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but
sorry,
what... What did he, what's he have to do with this case?
He doesn't, but I'm just talking as far as the people that advise the Rules Advisory Committee have been in that position. You were talking about malpractice.
Right.
And I'm merely asserting that that doesn't make a slam dunk either.
All right.
That's all I'm saying. I didn't say it necessarily.
I'm not saying it's a slam dunk. I'm just saying that's what's lurking around in the background on this case.
That certainly has occurred to me as we've been going through this case, Your Honor. But it's simply, to me, a matter, it's not a matter that there's an ambiguity created by our argument. If you read 6E by itself, 6E says that we win. If you read 6E in conjunction with 59 and 50, I still think if we do the best we can to make the rules come together, it still says that we win and that there is not an ambiguity that goes the other way. It's simply a matter, should we be entitled to the day in court to press this argument or should we not? Do the rules allow it? And the rules certainly do. You can't read, I don't think, 6E any other way than to say that's a paper and that paper was required to be served.
Counselor, isn't there a distinction between a journal entry signed by a judge that is filed with the clerk as opposed to a motion that is filed with the clerk on behalf of one party or another that triggers the need for a response by a party?
Is there a difference? Absolutely, Your Honor, but I think 6E addresses that when 6E says after the service of a notice, which could be a motion, or other paper upon him. And I think, in the first place, the word other paper certainly means significantly more than motion. or when this court passed this rule, they would have said so. As a matter of fact, in that same rule, Your Honor, in Civil Rule 6E, the last sentence says, this subsection does not apply to responses to services of summons under Rule 4 through 4.6. Obviously, this court, when they passed this rule, was aware that there were some times they didn't want the 3 days to apply. It would have been just as easy to say 4.6, 50, and 59. Yet the court chose not to take that action because it seems to me clearly they anticipated that the rule would allow for the additional 3 days for filing. With that, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Close. Mr. Brown.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. I'm Philip Brown, and along with my co-counsel on this appeal, Michael Heffernan, and my co-counsel at trial, Stephen Brown, represent Anne Marie Harvey. What petitioner is asking this court to do is rewrite the rules of civil procedure. And what is at stake is a very important principle that this court has held to, and that's the important principle of the finality of judgments. If petitioner's position is adopted, then finality of judgments won't occur in any situation where a party is served by mail with a judgment entry. The time for filing post-trial motions for...
I read that argument in your brief, but I couldn't follow it because all you do is add 3 days and make it final. So I couldn't understand what you meant, why it wouldn't be final. You just add 3 days, and now it's a final.
Well, as the rules read, Your Honor, Rules 50B and 59B say you have to file your motion within 14 days of the entry of judgment.
And if we agree with the other side and say 3 days applies, then it becomes 17 if it's mailed, correct? It doesn't give them 20 days. It doesn't give them 15 days. It gives them 17.
In this case, but in any other case, in a case where the clerk doesn't serve it within 3 days by mail. And, of course, Rule 5B says there are four different methods to serve a judgment, and service by mail is only one of them. In the situation where the clerk doesn't mail it out within 3 days, but mails it out in 7 or 10 days, or where the postmaster sends the mail back to the clerk, now we're not talking 3 days after entry of judgment for the finality to occur. Now it's 3 plus 6 weeks, 3 plus 10 weeks.
Well, what happens if do away with the 3 days, if those same scenarios take place when the clerk mails something out and it is returned, or there's an error at the post office, or any one of innumerable things happens to that piece of paper where it doesn't get in the hands of the intended? What's the rule then?
Well, the rule is that the judgment is final. The judgment is entered on the basis of Civil Rule 58B. And whether it is served does not affect its finality. The only...
Well, why does this... If that's your argument, and then on the flip side, you're saying a three-day mailing extension is going to wreak havoc. It really won't if you say it's final when it's filed.
That's what the rules say. It's final when it's entered. That's what 58B says specifically.
Entered, which means when it's filed with the clerk, signed by the judge and filed with the clerk.
That's correct.
So the 3 days really have no bearing on your argument.
I guess I don't follow your question. The 3 days we don't think apply in the situation where 50B and 59B are sought, and we're dealing with a very limited question.
Right.
We're not talking about a right of appeal. In Your Honor's scenario, if the judgment entry is never received, the time for appeal doesn't run. Then that's specifically provided for.
That's not what they're asking. They're only asking for the three-day provision. And if you have one of these other scenarios, then other rules come into play, and the three-day rule doesn't even... I guess I'm still not understanding how 3 days wreaks havoc to the system.
Well,
I'm not following your argument, so I guess you have to try.
Presumably, and the case law says that the 14-day requirement for filing these post-trial motions mm-hmm. underpins the principle of finality of judgments. A party knows when the court enters judgment that it's got a final judgment, and it can begin to act accordingly. The other side, then, the losing party can go ahead and seek out an appeal or seek out post-trial motions, but the rules are very clear that 14 days apply from the date of the entry of judgment within which to file those particular motions. Under the argument advanced by petitioner, they want to add 3 days to any time the entry is served by mail, whenever it is served by mail, and that's why it affects the finality of judgments. It could go on for any period of time.
I guess that's maybe where I lose you. I didn't understand them to say whenever it's served by mail. It would be just 3 days from, my understanding of their argument, and maybe I don't have it right, is if it's filed on the 10th, you have your 14 days. If they mail it, you have 17 days. I didn't understand them to say if they don't mail it for a month, I then still get 14 days plus 3 more days. I mean,
well,
I guess that's where, I don't think that's what they're arguing, but I might be wrong. I'll have to go back and look at the briefs or ask them on redirect. But
I'm just looking at the certified conflict issue here, and it reads in part, whether Ohio Civil Rule 6E extends the time for filing a motion for new trial under Civil Rule 59B or a motion for judgment JNOV under Civil Rule 50B beyond 14 days after the entry of judgment when the judgment entry is mailed to the parties. So clearly a premise for the position being taken by the appellant, by the petitioner in the case, is that the 3 days are added to when the judgment is mailed versus the plain statement of rules 50B and 59B, which say you have to file within 14 days after entry of judgment. And this is the distinction I think that has to be made. The rules 50B and 59B say you have 14 days after the entry of the judgment. 59D says the trial judge on his own, his or her own, can entertain sua sponte a motion for new trial, but can't do it after 14 days after entry of judgment.
Your point is the triggering mechanism is the entry date of judgment, not the date that that judgment has been served on any of the parties.
That's exactly right. And that's the way the rules read.
That's what the Court of Appeals said.
Yes.
That was the rationale for the Court of Appeals opinion.
That's correct.
The triggering dates are two different. They're two different critical times in the rules.
What Rule 6E says in particular is that when a party is required or allowed to do some act within a prescribed period after service of a notice or other paper, then 3 days shall be added to the period if the notice or paper is served. Clearly, 6E talks about service. It's talking about when you're served. Rules 50B and 59B plainly state that you have 14 days after entry of judgment. This court's decision in Duke.
Counsel, let me ask you a question. If a judgment entry is signed and filed by the judge on the first of the month, and it takes the clerk 5-6 days to mail that judgment entry to the parties, mm-hmm. and several days for it to reach the parties. They're still limited to the 14 days from the first of the month, no matter how long, even if they got it on the 13th day. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's specifically what the rules read. But this is only with regard to...
I know, 58 and...
50 and 59.
Or 50 and 59. I understand that. You think that's the intent of the rules, to put the parties in that position?
Yes, Your Honor, I do, because it underpins, and the case law relates that it underpins the principle of finality of judgment. And I think I understand
what you're... How does 3 days erode those underpinnings?
Because it could be 3 days from whatever date the clerk mails out.
No, I don't think that's what they're asking here, based on my reading, and I think Justice Stratton's reading is that they're asking for 3 days for mailing,
mm-hmm.
and if it is served on the, if it is filed, executed and filed on the first, 17 days from that date would be the calculation. How does the distinction between 14 and 17 days erode the underpinnings of finality here? When the clerk is relying on a third-party delivery system, the mail.
If the clerk were not to mail it out for 14 days. that's how it erodes the finality of judgments, because now it's 14 plus 3 plus 14.
No. I'm not saying that, and I don't think anybody's arguing that here. I think that that's kind of an issue that you're clouding here that is not before this court. I don't think anybody's asking for the time to start running the day the clerk drops it in the mailbox. I don't think that's it at all, and we'll find out on redirect, but I really am at a loss, and if you can explain it, given my scenario that you count 17 days from the date that is filed, how does that erode the underpinnings?
If in that particular situation, it would seem like the three-day distinction isn't much.
Is meaningless?
Not meaningless, but isn't much. There's still the opportunity of the party who has the judgment to have to sit and wait. I mean, the thing that it causes is that a party with a judgment now has to not only wait to see if the thing's been mailed instead of served one of the other ways, and I mean the thing, the judgment entry, served one of the other ways under 5B, but it also has to see that it has to know that the service was complete before the time runs.
Well, and isn't completion an element of each, no matter what the service is?
No. The judgment is final when it's entered, and that's Rule 58B. It's very clear about that. The time for filing motions, these two post-trial motions, is 14 days after the entry of the judgment, which, again, is under 58B.
What is your understanding of what happens? Forget the three-day rule right now. What happens if the clerk doesn't mail it out for 21 days? You get it 21 days after, so the 14 days is gone. What are your rights when you have not gotten notice of that judgment entry?
Well, and clearly the right to appeal the judgment is still there under Rule 4A, but I think that civil rule...
All right, let's
take
it out for 35 days.
Well...
Okay, what's your right?
Rule 60B, I think, clearly affords the right of opportunity for redress. I mean, it's a remedial rule.
Okay.
Unlike these two rules, which I think are governing the procedure that has to be followed so that these things are orderly and the rule of law is followed. 60B, clearly it provides the opportunity. The Larry Murphy dump truck case is wrong, and it's wrongly decided. It's wrong because it reads the civil rules to require the clerk to mail the entry of judgment. The Larry Murphy dump truck case specifically concludes that 3 days applies to the filing of these post-trial motions because the rules require the clerk to mail it. And that's incorrect. It was incorrect at that time. As we've already discussed, there's no requirement, Rule 58B, that the clerk mail the entry of judgment. The Court of Appeals in the dump truck case assumes that because 58B requires the clerk to mail the judgment, the three-day service by mail rule applies. The Duganitz case, decided by this court in 2001, a per curiam opinion, is an important consideration here. It overrules a case called City of Cheviot versus Siciliano. And that's important because Siciliano relies on dump truck for the same conclusion that this court rejected in Duganitz. Siciliano is wrong because it directly is in conflict with this court's decision in Duganitz on the very same issue. And Siciliano has been overruled by this court in Duganitz because it is a lower court decision that states a principle of law that this court has since rejected. And because Siciliano is wrong, so is dump truck, because both cases premise their conclusions about service by mail, the service by mail rule, on a reading of the civil rules, which is contrary to the clear principle of law set forth in Duganitz. I would just say, and I won't take more of the court's time, because I don't get that chance anyway. If petitioner's position is adopted, it creates an anomaly. And the anomaly is this: a party that receives service of the entry of judgment by mail gets 3 days more than the 14 days set forth specifically in Rules 50 and 59B. The trial judge who conducted the trial has control over the docket and over the disposition of the case, doesn't get any more than 14 days after entry of judgment. That's Rule 59B. And the party that gets served by mail also has more time than the parties that are served by facsimile or personal service, or the last method that the Rule 5B allows.
But what is the purpose of 6E then? What does 6E mean?
6E means that when you have, one of the justices asked the question, when a motion.
I'm one of them.
I know. I don't remember which one. When a party files a motion unilaterally with the clerk, there's a requirement of service. And so the 6E applies to provide that 3 days are added to the time for responding.
Right, but it says whenever a party has the right to do some act. Well, don't they have the right to make a motion in 14 days?
But I think you have to read the whole clause there, right to do some act after service by mail.
Right.
In this case, we're talking about rules that say required to do an act after entry of judgment. And so the 3 days applies where the act is after service. I see that I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Crown. Close, you've saved almost 5 minutes of your time.
Your Honors, if I might, I'd like to ask some of the questions that were asked and not responded to. Justice Stratton, in addition to the certified question, we filed a proposition of law, and all that proposition of law says is give us 3 additional days if it's done by mail. We have asked for no additional expansion beyond that.
So your position is that if you don't get it for 12 days, you don't get the mailing for 12 days, you don't have 14 plus 3.
Absolutely not.
You just have the 17 from.
And the rules do create a little bit of anomaly, because what can happen, let's say, for instance, the clerk doesn't send the notice, so we never get it, or we don't get it for 60 days. We know that under the appellate rules, we've still got, because of due process reasons, the right to do the appeal. If we file the appeal within 30 days after the service is finally made, we may have lost, and we have lost, the right for a motion for a new trial, right for a mitigator, right for JNOV. That's okay. Counsel in this state can live with that because they know there's a definitive rule and they know that there's no extension in the civil rules like there is in the appellate rules to allow that appeal. And as long as we've got a due process right to take the appeal that's required by the Ohio Constitution, we're cool.
Well, counsel,
I can very well have no right in a case to ever file a motion for a new trial or a motion for a JNOV, but still have the right to file the appeal.
Counsel, I thought there were a whole host of things that in the practice of law, you just have to be checking with the clerk on a regular basis to see if an entry has been put on because the clock starts running on you. I thought that was the nature of the practice of law, that when you get it or find out about it, doesn't help you much. It's when it went on.
Your Honor, I don't question that we have to watch the dockets, and thank God for computerized dockets because it gives us a much better ability to do that than we used to. But we're not talking here about knowing when something happened. We're talking is how do we count the time? And Rule 6E, among others, tells us how to count the time. And it says if it's a paper and it's required to be served, which it is, that we get an additional 3 days. So we're not talking about watching when it happens. We're talking about how do we do the numbers? How do we count to know when an item has to be filed?
59 are quite specific in their direction to, as Justice Piper says, I guess to make lawyers watch the 58, watch the docket. Is it possible, do you think, that our rules advisory, this rule probably came from our rules advisory committee, that we do not have an exclusion in 6E for, as we do for Rule 4 and Rule 4.6 for 50 or 58, because there might have been a feeling that why do we want to encourage the filing of motions that challenge the judgment of the court? I don't know. Obviously, there's no record on that, but it seems to me that could be a reason that that 6E does not include 58 or 50 in its exceptions.
Your Honor, I don't agree with that proposition for a couple reasons. One is there are other places where the rules specifically accept 50, 53, 59 by number. And that would have been easy for you to do when you adopted these rules. Secondly, this isn't a matter where anything that we're talking about encourages to do anything different than what they already are. All it's saying is allow us to make the accurate count of 3 days as applied under Civil Rule 6E. That's all it's saying. We're not extending anybody's right to anything. We're just definitively saying this is how we count the number, and the only way you can reconcile 50 and 59 is to read that we added the additional 3 days.
And then you would, counsel, you would say that the trial court obviously retains jurisdiction then for that 17 days as opposed to the 14?
I would say that's correct, that is not. Well, the trial court actually, the judgment is a valid final judgment. There's no question about that.
But on the day it's entered.
Under 50 and 59, they retain the jurisdiction to do what they need to do after that period of time, presuming within 17 days you file your motion for a new trial or JNOV or remitter for that matter. If there are no further questions, I thank the court for your attention.
Sorry you had to
end up with such an anesthetic case here after all the interesting arguments.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal will please adjourn court.